Okay.
Could you just start off with telling us a brief story about how your life started with anxiety or depression and when it started as a kid?
Yeah,
what
sure.
Kind of happened?
So in seventh grade, I started to feel just really sad, really depressed, hated myself, felt like I wanted to be dead or I deserved to be dead. And then in eighth grade, I tried to commit suicide by hanging myself in the school locker room. We had to wear ties and jackets. It was a prep school. So I tied my tie around the pipe, a pipe, and I jumped off the windowsill. And fortunately, the pipe broke. And I sort of crashed to the floor and ran out. I was really confused. And after that, I started seeing a psychiatrist. So I went all the way through high school. And it sort of helped, but not a lot. Do you want me to tell you my whole story?
Sure, yeah.
So I saw psychiatrists on and off for years, 20s, 30s, into my 40s. I tried literally every medication under the sun to try to alleviate. And the depression was really strong almost every day. I mean, I'm fortunate in that I wasn't one of those people who like can't get out of bed. I got out of bed. I went to work. I had a good career. I got a family. I did what I had to do. But every minute I was pushing through this pain and feeling like I suck. I'm a piece of shit. I'm no good. And this sort of other feeling of like, I need to kill myself. I need to kill myself. I need to kill myself. And it's been on and on and on for years. And eventually I finally started seeing this one psychopharmacologist who looks beyond medication. We tried everything and that didn't work. And then he said, you know, have you thought of ECT, which is electroshock therapy? And I was like, that sounds barbaric and horrible. No way. And he was like, it's different from the way it used to be, but it is 85% effective in drug-resistant depression. So I was 45, so this was 6 years ago. I was in so much pain. I was like, I'll try anything. I don't care. So I did. So 3 days a week, I went up all the way up to near Presbyterian Hospital at 178th Street, and I got electroshock therapy. And it's easy. They give you a general anesthetic. They knock you out. They give you a muscle relaxant because what ECT does is, you know, they run a lot of electric current through your brain. And it's not so much the electric current that has the effect, but what it does is it induces a grand mal epileptic seizure. And the seizure is what supposedly acts on your neurons and helps with the depression. So you don't want to be awake for that. And so I was able to, so I did, so 3 days a week, I would go in at 8 o'clock, they put me out. The procedure itself is like 5 minutes, but you know, the anesthetic took 40 minutes to wear off. And after that, I did it, and I was very lucky. I had almost no side effects. A lot of people get short-term memory loss and nausea and headaches, but I would leave around, you know, the anesthetic would wear off. They'd make sure I was okay. I wasn't going to walk into a wall and let me go, and I went to work and was fine. I had 3 sessions a week for 4 weeks, and one Sunday I was in the playground with my kids, and I felt happy for the first time in my adult life. Like, it was like the clouds parted and this albatross was lifted off my neck. It was the most incredible feeling.
That's great.
And so I continued tapering. So we went down to twice a week, and then once a week, and then once every other week, and for about 8 months, just to make sure that the effects held. Then I continued therapy, but therapy was very different because for all those years I had been in therapy, this brick wall of depression was like right in the way. I couldn't really do anything. I wasn't able to affect anything psychologically that had been going on and like make any understandings or connections because it was just like, I'm so unhappy, I can't do anything else. So finally, once the depression was gone, I was able to start to actually make progress in therapy. And so that was great. And I, you know, did a lot of work that I should have done when I was in my 20s, like, you know, trying to figure out like shit that happened in my childhood or, you know, conflicts or whatever. And then about 4 months ago, I started digging really deep into my past and my psyche, and my depression came back and I crashed again. And so I went back to this, and I've been on some sustaining meds since then, haven't done anything. And then, so my doctor said, well, it's time to try ketamine. I don't know if you know what ketamine is. It was invented in the 60s as an anesthetic, for operations, because the anesthetic that they were using at the time had too many side effects. The anesthetic they were using at the time was PCP, which was actually invented as an anesthetic in the 50s.
I did not know
that. I didn't either. I just found this out. Ketamine had many fewer side effects. It was a great... In the 80s and 90s, people started abusing ketamine as a club drug, like Molly, like ecstasy. I guess Molly is ecstasy, but like LSD. It was called Special K. And so people would like take a lot of it because it gives you a really good high. But people would overdo it and they'd get really sick. And so it got a bad name, just like PCP got a bad name when people abused it, and LSD got a bad name when people abused it, and psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, got a bad name when people abused it. But in the 60s, even, they had started to do experiments with these hallucinogens on depression and on addiction. And so everybody, I don't know if you know who Timothy Leary is. In the 60s, he was a professor at Harvard. And he, I don't know if he had discovered LSD, but he was very influential in its sort of popularization. But he started to tell the world, like, everybody should take LSD. And there were all these people who were, like, getting really sick and, you know, getting super high and, like, jumping off buildings and doing all this stupid shit. Because it wasn't responsible. And so the country flipped out. All these kids are on drugs. They're using all these terrible psychedelics. So they basically banned everything. And all the research stopped until maybe 15 years ago. It started to come out of hiding a little bit, and these guys at Yale discovered that ketamine could actually be an incredibly effective antidepressant. And so they've started to experiment with a bunch of other stuff. 60 Minutes 2 weeks ago had a big piece on psilocybin, which is the active ingredient of magic mushrooms. You go in, these people go in, they have one trip, which is like 4 hours, and they like see crazy hallucinations, like really like horrible stuff. But at the end of it, this one woman who'd been a smoker for 40 years, 4 packs a day, one treatment, no cravings, zero addiction, gone. One guy who'd had 20 drinks a day, all his addiction was gone. So they're doing incredible things with these psychedelic drugs, these hallucinogens. Anyway, I tried ketamine, and it was a 40-minute IV drip, and my depression went away almost immediately. The suicidal thoughts went away literally within 4 hours. Unfortunately, it doesn't hold. It comes back after a week. So I did 6 treatments of that. This was like 3 weeks ago. So 2 a week for 3 weeks. And now I'm in a sort of a tapering period as well. But it's really an unbelievable medication for a lot of people. And to the point where, like, I go do it at Columbia on 51st Street, and they're, like, full. Like, there are 5 rooms, mm-hmm. and they're like, we have to expand. There's so many people right. who are realizing these could be helpful. I realize it's a very long explanation, but that's, you know, I guess part of the point is you never know when it's going to come back. You always have to be vigilant, and you have to keep trying and keep trying different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
right.
It's just a matter of, like, okay, talk didn't work, pills didn't work, ECT worked and then stopped working, and now ketamine works. I'm sure it'll stop working, and I may have to try something else or go back. And it's just a constant sort of fending off of, you know, this physiological issue that I've got.
You talked briefly about, like, digging deep into the causes, or thinking back about your childhood, your past. Like, have you figured out what the causes of, like, your anxiety or your depression, like, have been? Have you, like, thought about that as much?
Yeah, very much so.
If you feel comfortable, could you share maybe, like, because we're trying to connect to how... Hi, Sergeant.
Hi.
Is this...
you can use my office.
Nowadays, everyone's talking about social media, and how the intersection of, like, social media can affect teen anxiety, teen depression. And so we're interested in, like, getting your perspective as someone who didn't grow up around having access to social media. Like, what were the causes of your anxiety growing up?
I mean, look, obviously we had all the same social anxieties. We're human, like, you know, oh my God, nobody's going to like me, and I'm so stupid, and I said something dumb in class, or, like, you know, is that girl or boy going to want to go out with me? Social media definitely exacerbates it, and, you know, is another bullying tool, but it's also a way to share. I mean, for me, it was, I'm sure, genetic. Physiological. Both my parents have depression. My sister has been in and out of institutions her whole life. My brother is not doing great. And I think it was also just a lot of the way I grew up. I think, you know, I don't want to go into details about my parents, but, you know, they, certain ways that they acted towards me or ways that they treated me absolutely exacerbated things. And, you know, it's again, if I had been more able to access my, you know, controlling my emotions in a way, you know, as opposed to just having this, just feeling like shit all the time. Hope, you know, maybe 25 years ago I could have sort of had these epiphanies and understandings. But I feel like it was really delayed because I had to kind of remove this thing that I couldn't, you know, that was just taking me over. I think it's, look, we all, our initial developmental relationships shape a lot of our lives and how we handle it. And, you know, they've done some interesting studies on soldiers with PTSD where, the ones who get the worst PTSD are not the ones who have been exposed to the most horrible stuff on the battlefield. It's the ones who have the most fragile psyches and who are most prone to depression and sort of how they grew up and whether or not, I mean, essentially whether or not you're mentally healthy and strong dictates how you deal with trauma, because everybody's going to have, you know, things that happen. Obviously PTSD is extreme, but I think that's why they can study it. And again, like, people who saw the worst stuff were not necessarily the ones with the worst PTSD. It was really what mental acuity and strength and power they brought to those experiences in terms of how they dealt with them. Right. And I think I was, to some extent, traumatized emotionally a lot as a kid. And, you know, really set me up for, I think if I, you know, maybe if I hadn't been, I might be a lot stronger today and wouldn't have the depression. I do think there's definitely a biological element to it, but I do think that some of the way I was raised really contributed to making it a lot worse.
We asked kind of our friends this and kids at our school, and we want to ask you the same question. Do you view anxiety specifically as a positive or negative thing?
It's a good question. I think it's a little bit of it is good. You know, it's motivating. Too much of it's bad. You know, not bad. Too much of it is uncomfortable and makes you feel horrible and can flip from being a positive motivator, like, oh shit, I really better study for that test because I want to do well and I'm anxious about doing well and it motivates me to kind of work hard, to I'm paralyzed because I'm so anxious about this and I can't get through my day and I'm really uncomfortable. And so I think in degrees it can be helpful. And then again, I'm not a clinician. I don't know if I'd characterize a little bit of that as anxiety or just motivation or something to like do well on your test. But obviously, if it's a clinical issue, it's very crippling, and very very challenging.
How do you recommend like kids go about finding that balance between if they perceive anxiety to be something that can be a motivator and something that can be beneficial to them, or something that can just allow them to go down that rabbit hole?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, you know, see what it's doing to you, and if you feel like it's starting to drive you down the rabbit hole, get help, like real professional help. I don't think you can fix any of this stuff on your own. I mean, look, there's all kinds of great drugs, you know, there's Concerta and there's Ativan. There's a lot of stuff that can work, and by great, I mean obviously given by a physician in a controlled environment. There are things that can really be helpful for that. There's a lot of anti-anxiety and a lot of antipsychotics, antidepressants that can all be used in the right ways. I think the problem is, and I think it's great, it's less with people your age. You know, for people my age, there's a real stigma around mental health.
Yeah,
like, you know, you're crazy, you know, what the fuck, man? I mean, my 12-year-old who tried to kill herself spent a week and a half in Bellevue in the pediatric psychiatric ward. She was there for a week and a half. When I was a kid, if somebody said, you're going to Bellevue, man, it means, like, you're fucking crazy and you're a loser and you're a lunatic and you're out of your mind. Now it's like, oh, she went to Bellevue because just, like, she hurt her knee. You know, it's something physical that had to be done. She had to go to the hospital and spend a week there getting it fixed. I mean, look, everybody, I mean, I'm not saying it's a paradise and everybody's like, oh, yes, I'm so glad you're fine and we're all here to support you. More accepting right. That, like, it's a physical issue. It's a sickness that has to be dealt with. I mean, there's a great cartoon. I don't know, I was asking Hayden if you saw the article that I wrote in the Hollywood Reporter.
No, I haven't yet, but I'm sure I will after that.
You should. Well, there's a great cartoon in there. I'll show it to you. The title is If Mental Illnesses Were Treated Like Physical Illnesses. So here, you can zoom in on the different panels.
Is an article that someone interviewed you for, or you wrote?
I wrote, about my depression, to try to destigmatize it.
And you created the cartoon too?
No, I found it. But I thought it was appropriate because in terms of helping destigmatize it, it's like people say, like, just snap out of it, man.
Yeah.
It's like, well, just snap out of that heart attack. Yeah. Okay, sure, no problem. Like, there's a pan, like, can you try not having the flu?
Sure.
Right.
And people say that to you when, you know, you're depressed or anxious or something. You know, they just feel like, oh, it's just something that you can change easily, or you're sad, or like, you know, stop having the blues, get over it. Like, which is, yeah, in some cases, I suppose, you know, I'm sad about, like, I missed my train, but maybe I'm overreacting. But if I'm clinically depressed or anxious, you know, physiologically, that's a real problem. It's not like you just snap out of it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that that's one of the reasons I wrote the article. That's why I'm trying to talk about this as much as possible to destigmatize it and also make people really understand this is an illness. This is a physical problem that has lots of opportunities and ways to cure it, but needs to be addressed in the same way.
Do you think that people nowadays being more understanding and open to educating themselves on these hard topics, do you think... what was I about to say? We got those moments. Do you think that that has to do with a culture shift or more of a more awareness and more education? Because it seems as